Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Linda Smith Dyke Yoga A Go-Go Show. It is your way of getting up to date and thoroughly modern about the importance of yoga and the influence of yoga on health. And for that, we have a former, I don't want to call it former, I guess a nurse practitioner. Once you're a nurse practitioner, you're a nurse practitioner. And now advanced yoga instructor who teaches in our area on the show, Linda Smith Dyke. Welcome to the show, Linda.
Thank you, Tony. Very good to be here.
Rick Phillips is in timeout, and let me just say that some people need to grow up, and we'll just leave it at that. Our sponsor for this show is the Disease of the Month Club. This month's disease, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease. Their motto, take our advice before you ice, learn about ALS. ALS, there are three words, amyotrophic, meaning no nourishment to the muscles. So this is a disease that causes the muscles to waste away. Lateral, of course, meaning to the side. These are nerve cells that are on the side of the spinal cord, and sclerosis means scarring. So there is a scarring process happening to the nerves that feed the muscles, and that leaves you with muscle weakness, and eventually the muscles are deprived of the nerves to tell them what to do. It's also called Lou Gehrig's disease for baseball player Lou Gehrig, who had this. Interestingly enough, another baseball player, Jim Catfish Hunter, who was a pitcher for the Oakland Athletics, also developed amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. Other famous people with this disease, the most famous currently, Stephen Hawking, theoretical physicist in the United Kingdom. Also, composer Dmitri Shostakovich died of ALS, and Mao Zedong, the leader of the People's Republic of China, had ALS as well. You know, how would you feel, in say, if somebody had Mao Zedong's disease? That's a little bit different than Lou Gehrig's disease. Lou Gehrig's disease is kind of an all-American disease, but you'd have sort of a vaguely communist disease. It wouldn't quite play as well.
Well, that may be true.
Symptoms.
Depends on what side of the world you are.
Well, yeah, I don't know what they call it in China. I suspect not Lou Gehrig's disease. Symptoms include muscle weakness in the hands, arms, legs, or the muscles of speech. Eventually, a lot of problems with swallowing and even breathing. The muscles have little twitches. Each individual muscle fiber, fasciculates, we call it, makes the muscle look sort of like a bag of worms because of these individual muscle fibers. They fire off because there is no organization from the nerves. A lot of cramps, especially in the hands and feet. Difficulty in using the arms and legs. Eventually, unable to speak or project the voice because you can't breathe deep enough and manipulate your vocal cords in order to project your voice, and difficulty in breathing and swallowing. The mean survival time, the average survival time, life expectancy, 3 to 5 years. Some people live 10 years or more, and it has had some remission in some people, but that's very rare, and there is no understanding as to how that happens. The symptoms start usually in the muscles of speech, swallowing, or hands, arms, and legs, and the sequence is different from person to person, but muscle weakness occurs as an initial presenting complaint, generally about 60% of the time. People drop things, get abnormally fatigued, and go on to develop ALS. And it is a very difficult condition to diagnose. Early on, there are a lot of things that can cause muscle weakness, and so it is difficult to diagnose. It is a, for most people, relentlessly progressive disease, and eventually, over the course of 3 to 5 years or more, causes the, it is fatal. So, that is a little bit about ALS. We'll talk a little bit more about the disease in our second fractional portion. Our sponsor, the Disease of the Month Club, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease. Take our advice before you ice. Now, Linda was gracious enough to come on the show. We have been communicating off and on, but mostly off, for quite a while. I am very familiar with her husband, Greg, who works with Habitat for Humanity. He is the director of Habitat for Humanity in our area. Greg, also, I first met him when he was an emergency room nurse. He is a minister. He is now a very, very good carpenter and, I guess, a contractor building these houses for Habitat for Humanity in eastern Kentucky, a man I have a great deal of admiration for. Greg says, well, you should talk to my wife. She also is a very interesting person, doing a lot of good things. And I said, I should. And then we let it go with that until Linda finally jarred my attention by sending me an email and saying, look, what are you doing? Why are you giving me the silent treatment? And especially if you're a radio host, the silent treatment is about the worst thing you can do. So, Linda, again, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself. We talked a little bit on the way over. You are not originally from eastern Kentucky.
No, I'm not. It's interesting that both sides of my family are. So my heritage is eastern Kentucky, but grew up in the Navy. So we were kind of all over the U.S., the eastern part of the U.S. growing up. I was born in Groton, Connecticut on a Navy base.
And so I know a lot of, certainly a lot of people have military service. So you were there. What drew you back to Kentucky then? You had a chance to escape, and apparently you did.
Well, that's true. I raised my children in Lexington, Kentucky. Unfortunately, I was divorced, but I raised the four kids pretty much by myself. Came back to Lexington, Kentucky because I had a lot of family around here.
So it does help to have family in the area if you're trying to raise a family on your own. Why did you get interested in healthcare?
That was almost instinctive. I think as I thought about a career, it came pretty early on that I wanted to do healthcare, and it was just sort of my nature to be the caregiver.
Now, you went deep into healthcare. I mean, this was not just, I think I'll dabble at healthcare. St. Joseph Hospital in Lexington back in the 1990s as a clinic manager, and then at the University of Kentucky, the clinic manager for the high-risk obstetrics clinic. So you were in kind of an administrative position, I guess, in those areas. Did you have healthcare training or more administrative training at that point in your career?
It was really all healthcare training. I had a bachelor's degree in nursing. And the management part just sort of came on the job. And I've got to say, my true love is clinical. That's why I went back to be a family nurse practitioner. But I was raising the four kids I just mentioned, and it was much easier to be available when they needed me when I was doing administrative type work. The hours were more forgiving.
Then in the early 2000s, comprehensive epilepsy program at the University of Kentucky, clinical specialist there, and also in the medical, surgical, and infectious disease units at the University of Kentucky Medical Center. So again, this is high-tech nursing. This is at the University Medical Center there. And then, and you were getting your master's degree, and then all of a sudden, Berea Rural Health Ministry. You left the medical, surgical, and infectious disease unit at the University of Kentucky and went to become a rural family nurse practitioner. Now, that had to be jarring.
It was wonderful. I'd have to say, without stepping on any toes, I hope that was my favorite job. I absolutely loved. I was totally clinical again. That was my first position as a family nurse practitioner after school. And a beautiful program that's now closed. I loved everything about it. But I loved my husband more. I met my husband in Lexington. We were both working at the University of Kentucky, and we decided that we wanted to live in this area. And when we decided to get married, it was too far away from Berea.
I see. Now Berea is one of those gems in eastern Kentucky. If you've never been there, a university town with an exceptional university there and highly educated people sitting in an absolutely just a delightful rural setting. Great place to live and obviously a great place to have a healthcare ministry. From there, you came to St. Clair Regional. And, of course, many of our radio fans are familiar with our hospital and teaching program. You did the family medicine primary care clinics and also the psychiatry service.
Yes. I enjoyed both of them very much.
What brought you to St. Clair?
It was the healthcare institution in the region. My husband and I actually enjoyed Cave Run Lake. We had my stepson living with us at the time, and we all enjoyed sailing, canoeing, kayaking, and we decided we'd live close to Cave Run. And that's why we ended up here, and it was the closest healthcare institution.
So practicing at St. Clair, and then essentially this year, you started your Holistic Healing with Yoga Center in Wellington, and I think you have classes around in the area as well.
That's true.
Okay, we've established you're in the infectious disease unit on the wards at Chandler. You go to Berea, and I'll accept the fact that being clinical was really where you were headed there. But looking back on your education, again, the family nurse practitioner program in 2006, about 6 or 7 years later, we're looking at advanced yoga teacher training in the Kailash School of Yoga in the Himalayas. So trace your path from the medical surgical unit at the University of Kentucky to a school of yoga in the Himalayas.
All right. I'm glad you asked that question. I was doing the acute care nursing during my program because I wanted to get my acute care skill back while I was in school to be a family nurse practitioner. And then we've talked a little bit about the transition to Berea, lovely place to work, moved here after becoming married to my husband. Worked in psychiatry, loved it, fell in love with psychiatry without actually knowing that I would, because that was the position that was open. I'll have to be honest, working in the family medicine clinics as a primary care practitioner, there are many of us in primary care who find that very stressful, and I was one of those people. I loved it. I loved the patients. I have nothing negative to say about that except the fact that I found it very stressful. My good husband had suggested that I could better handle my stress with meditation, and he suggested that we get a book by the Zen Buddhist master Thich Nhat Hanh, very well-known Buddhist master who was nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize by Martin Luther King Jr. in the 70s due to his protest against the Vietnam War, and he is a Vietnamese. That book started my path. I started the mindfulness and meditation practices. Greg and I went to the local bookstore,
The Coffee Tree Books.
Yes, and found the Thich Nhat Hanh book named Happiness. I began doing the meditations in the book. It was very much helping my stress level, and it wasn't very long after that my husband Greg again had an idea. He said, Linda, why don't you take a sabbatical and take a spiritual journey for a couple of months? Since this is helping so much, go down that path. And I loved the idea. I was surprised that it could be a reality from financial and every other perspective. St. Clair was very good about working with me to take a leave, and I went. So at that point, I was on the path to learn meditation more deeply. I'd always wanted to go to France, I'll be honest. So I went to the Thich Nhat Hanh Buddhist monastery named Plum Village in the south of France and stayed for a month to learn meditation. That was pretty much life-changing. Went on from there to an ashram in India to do yoga. I'd always loved yoga, had been doing it steadily since about 2000, the year 2000, and loved that as well. And when I was in the ashram, it came to me, could I possibly be a yoga teacher? I'd had many back injuries as a nurse through the years and wondered if that was possible. I was told it would be, so that planted the seed. Then my family and I went to India. We went with two of my stepdaughters and my husband a year later, this time to the Himalayas, the home of the Dalai Lama. We had a very good experience visiting there for a couple of weeks, and I found the yoga school that I ended up attending. Just by doing drop-in classes, it was the right place, the right time, and I met the yogi that I would work with. My husband and I decided that it was a good time for me to stay for the 3-month course. I was already there, and it was starting the day after we were scheduled to leave. We started that course, and I lasted through the advanced teacher training. I didn't know if I would, but I would like to say on the day that I started the course was my 60th birthday.
You know, my wife has suggested on several occasions that I take a spiritual journey, but it doesn't involve anything that enlightening. Why don't you take a spiritual journey, grab a refreshing beverage, and listen to the Health Matters banjo music. We'll come back with our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. You're listening to Health Matters. This is the Linda Smith Dyke Yoga A Go-Go Show, our thoroughly modern way to talk about yoga, to inform you about what she's doing in our community to try to help with teaching people the principles of yoga and stress management. I am your host, Dr. Tony Weaver, with me again for the second fractional portion, advanced nurse practitioner and yoga instructor, Linda Smith Dyke. Welcome back, Linda.
Thank you.
Our sponsor for the second time, Amyotrophic Lateral Sclerosis, ALS. This is the Disease of the Month Club reminding you, take our advice before you ice. Learn about ALS. Last time we talked about the name. Amyotrophic, meaning the muscles are deprived of their nervous connections. Lateral, meaning it's on the side of the spinal cord. And sclerosis, meaning scarring. It is a scarring process that deprives the muscles of their connection to the brain through the nerves. The problem then becomes the muscles are no longer under your control. The muscles are freed from that and they get weaker as they lose their nervous support. In 2009, the Federal Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry created a national ALS registry. Now, here's the thing. We're not required to report ALS to any authority. So if we diagnose it, there's no reporting requirements. The other thing is a disease this rare, you can't hand out questionnaires to people to find out how common it is. So this disease registry, they searched through Medicare, Medicaid, Veterans Health Administration, and other data banks to look for people who were diagnosed with ALS. And then they had a website that encouraged people who had ALS to sign up and visit the website so they could get an idea of how many people in the U.S. have ALS. Now, between October 19, 2010 and December 31, 2011, they identified about 12,000 people in the U.S. who had definite ALS, and that's a prevalence of around 3.9 cases per 100,000. That's actually higher than we thought it was with these 12,000 total people. Now, if you take the U.S. population and look at the Kentucky's population, that should mean that we have around 150 to 300 would be a high-end ALS patients in the state of Kentucky. Now, compare that with heart disease. 84 million people have that. Cancer, around 2 million people have that. Alzheimer's disease, 5 million. Diabetes, 29 million. And you're looking at 12,000 people. So you've got to realize this is a rare disease. That's one of the criticisms of the Ice Bucket Challenge. We've raised almost $100 million for a very rare disease. It is a horrific disease. I've had a couple of patients myself that I've watched succumb to this disease, and it's absolutely horrific, and it is a great cause for financial giving. The problem is when you have 12,000 people and $100 million, using that money wisely becomes difficult. So it is a thing to think about as you do your fundraising. No sour grapes here. Glad that they were able to have that successful fundraising challenge. But you do need to keep in mind this is not a very common disease at all, either in the U.S. or in the state of Kentucky. That is our sponsor, the Disease of the Month Club, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, Lou Gehrig's disease. Take our advice before you ice. When we left Linda, last fractional portion, we were talking about her journey from a nurse working at a university hospital to a nurse practitioner working in a rural setting to St. Clair, where she not only worked as a nurse practitioner in a family medicine clinic, but also helped our psychiatry service, to then a spiritual journey where you started with books at Coffee Tree Bookstore, which is a local bookstore here, and I understand that completely. You skipped my next step would be to go to Lexington or Cincinnati, see if there was some yoga expert there, and you went to France, you went to the Himalayas, and also an ashram and a yoga school in India. You really delved deep into that. Now, take me back. I understand the spiritual journey, but for me, I'm always really practical about these things. How did you make those connections, and how did you decide where you were going to go to study yoga?
Well, I had studied yoga here in the United States long enough to realize that most of what's taught here is another form of physical exercise, and it's described as yoga. I don't want to take away from the folks who are in the Western world and teaching the full concept of yoga, but I knew that that was fairly hard to find. And I was more interested in the entire spiritual aspect of yoga, not just the postures. And quite often, that's all we think about or see in the U.S. I knew from studying meditation that coupled with my history of practicing yoga on my own and in various places over many years before I left, that it all began in India, and that I was likely to find the full scope of the practice of yoga, which is vast and it's life-changing. What I have found is that yogic practice, it gradually and holistically changes one's whole life in terms of what you eat and how you breathe and how you relate to other people, how you calm your mind. And so there's so many levels of what I learned that I knew were beyond what I would learn here.
So I understand then skipping the Tony Weaver step of just finding a strip mall in Cincinnati that has a yoga class. You were looking for the spiritual aspects of it. You were in India in 2012 and 2013. I guess my question is, were you worried about going to India at that time? This was obviously, had you been there before, or was this the first time?
No, I hadn't been there before. I was a little nervous, but perhaps I'd have to admit to some of this is just that I like to travel, and I had traveled in my younger days quite a bit. I was advised by more than one person before my first trip that a woman should never go to India alone and that I shouldn't do that. I had done the research, and I knew that it was likely that I was in enough of a protected environment that I would be okay. I knew there was a little risk, but I didn't think it would be enough to stop me from going. And in neither case did it turn out to be that I was in any kind of danger.
I believe you came at this from a Christian tradition.
That's right.
Okay. And so you were, again, looking for, I suppose, something to complement what you had learned through your Christian religion and were there. What was jarring? What was different about the tradition you found yourself in India?
Oh, my goodness. Well, India definitely has an effect on a person who's not been there before. The everyday life is so much different than everyday life in U.S. That's just like a whole other topic, perhaps, that we could do a whole other time.
I will say my daughter she does a lot of her research work abroad, and coming back to the United States, she finds jarring as well after you've been in other countries that are not quite as fixed on advertising on possessions and material goods. She finds it interesting to come back to a high consumption society like the U.S. So I'll accept that there were some pretty jarring changes there. So you came back then. I have this visual image of you like Luke Skywalker in the second Star Wars, where you are now the master. You have the yoga, you have the meditation concepts down, and you have this calm about you, and you can manipulate people's minds and all that sort of stuff. I guess that's not
true.
Don't
believe everything he says.
Okay. But you came back and decided to set up, and I guess Eastern Kentucky, not exactly the first hotbed of yoga practitioners I would think about, but you wanted to bring this back here.
Well, that's in a way what made it perfect, is that I knew we needed it. It's just like we probably all grew up in my generation hearing that if you want to do something new, find a need and then fill it. And so this kind of was perfect for me, although I didn't, it kind of came at me backwards instead of forwards. But because there was not much, there's certainly a few yoga teachers here, but not a full-time studio, not a full-time practice to join. And so I knew that I had an opportunity to offer something that I wanted living in this community, and I had not been able to access. And, of course, it gives me great joy to be able to do it as my full-time work now. But what I really wanted to add, too, about the India connection and what you mentioned about with my Christian background, to be looking into a month in a Buddhist monastery learning to meditate, and then as it ended up 3.5 to 4 months, if you add the two ashram stays together, being exposed to some of the elements of the Hindu religion. Yoga is not considered a religion. And in fact, Thich Nhat Hanh does not describe Buddhism as a religion. He describes it as a lifestyle. But nevertheless, these areas where I studied gave me more tools. And this is where I say it spoke to me for myself, but it spoke to me for my patients. I'd had many primary care patients. I'd had many psychiatric patients. And I was beginning to see that this was giving tools to address problems in a different way in the patient populations I had had, as well as myself. And I could see that this would take me and others potentially beyond reliance on medication, give us different tools to independently manage our health, feeling that we had ownership of our health, and really could believe that we'd become mentally and physically healthier by practicing meditation and yoga.
Okay, so the idea then coming back is to, and I we talked about this again before the show. I've practiced Western medicine, obviously here in Eastern Kentucky for quite some time. I know firsthand the limits of what we can do with what I call pills and knives. There are real limits to what you can do in terms of trying to remediate some of the bad life choices that people make, some of the problems that we face here in Eastern Kentucky. It would be so much better if we could try to address those lifestyle problems and use medicine sort of as an adjunct rather than relying on pills. Rick and I have in many cases mentioned to our Health Matters audience about the idea of taking a pill so that you can have onion rings. If you only can suppress your stomach acid enough, you could actually eat onion rings, and we feel like that's just totally the wrong way to go. If something is disturbing to you, first try eliminating that thing or altering your situation before you take pills to support your lifestyle. And this is what we're talking about here, then trying to change the lifestyle. Now, with that being said, then run me through. My simple idea of yoga is sitting cross-legged with your palms up. So tell me what you do that then allows you to change a person's lifestyle. How do you approach this, if I were your client?
Well, I appreciate you asking me that question, because the majority of clients that I have had come to my business since I opened in February 2014 are perhaps have many common traits to you, Tony, have not practiced yoga about this age group, and are not flexible. And one of the common reasons that people tell me they are worried about coming to my yoga class is they'll say, but I don't bend that way. And I understand that. What I teach takes people from the ground up. I practiced with a yogi that I selected partly because he believed in gentle yoga. He believed pain, no gain. He believed to listening to the body the entire time that we practice and building gently what our body is able to do over time.
So it will
so
be
that's
okay.
Sort of how I help people with the inflexibility to move toward flexibility.
Gotcha. So it'd be okay if I brought my recliner to class, say, and because that would help me to relax, I think, if I could just hit the lever.
No. And in fact, Yogi Shivadas was the name of my yogi. I mention him often in my classes, would say that the first thing we should do is get rid of the chairs in our homes. And that is how we will begin to be more flexible with the opening of the hips if we don't use chairs. And I have to tell you, when I was in India, none of the ashrams had chairs. That took some getting used to.
I bet. Again, in my, some of my wilder speculations, I've wondered if our problem with heartburn might be related actually to recliners. Again, you go back to even historical houses in the U.S., their chairs were all at right angles. There were really no padded chairs and no cushions. You stayed upright until you went to bed, and that was the time that you reclined. And I often wondered about that change in our lifestyle. Have you been able to do that at home? How many chairs do you have in your house at home?
Oh, we don't have as many as maybe some people. But yes, we sit in our chairs. But I spend a lot of time out of a chair teaching as many classes as I do. I'm up to 9 classes a week. And my husband isn't as flexible as I am, but he will sit on the floor.
So you're teaching then about flexibility. You're teaching about the ability to focus and to concentrate, I guess, through those positions. Who are you looking for in terms of your ideal client?
Actually, there's two things that I wanted to share here. One is I didn't totally answer your question about how I help people to relax in class. So I'd like to go back to that. And then basically my answer will be that everybody is welcome into my class, except I'm not certified to teach children. But 18 and up, no problem, and maybe younger depending on the person. Now, as far as what we do to relax in class, I teach meditation with a mindfulness practice at the beginning and end of each class. Again, this is something that's very inherent in an Indian yoga type setting, which I didn't find when I was studying yoga here in the U.S. before.
Okay. So, going back to those people then, a person, say, who has arthritis, what about a person, say, with a knee replacement or hip replacement, that kind of person you would still be able to teach and they would still be able to get benefit?
I have many clients who are in that category. Everything that you just named, I've had, I do have clients who have the rods in the back and are still able to practice yoga. I have post-stroke clients who have now developed amazing balance. And quite a few with hip and knee replacements. Many of us, include myself, have arthritis in various joints, but this is helpful rather than hurtful.
The people come in, then they've got these. I assume some of them also have chronic pain complaints as well,
yes,
related to the arthritis or the other things.
Mm-hmm.
And your form of yoga, I've been reading the literature you sent me. First thing, you talk about stress reduction. How do you reduce stress?
Well, that could be another program. I bet you know that. That's a complicated answer, but it's the road that you start on. I think that's the way I would answer that for my own life, is everybody's got a path that they can start. But I think the key is deciding to do so and making the decision that I am going to find a way, and then beginning to practice the elements of relaxation that I teach. Breathing technique is very important for reducing the experience of stress, and also is a major key in keeping the mind in the present moment, which is the mindfulness practice. Mindfulness in the Buddhist tradition is the opposite of forgetfulness. Forgetfulness refers to not noticing the wonders of the present moment and not noticing the blessings of right here, right now. If we're forgetful of that, our thoughts, all of us humans, it seems, I'll say, especially in the U.S. with our lifestyle, our thoughts are monkey mind. I think most of us know what that feels like. The thoughts are like a monkey that go from branch to branch to branch, and we spend lots of time with our thoughts in the past unproductively, and we spend lots of time with our thoughts in the future unproductively. And much of this is becoming aware of where your thoughts are and giving yourself permission for them to remain in the present moment.
you know, I've been working on mental focus. I have a spiritual advisor myself who's been trying to lead me through these things. And I understand the idea. First of all, I feel bad about something that I did yesterday. I am concerned and upset about something that is upcoming. Yeah, that's a nice sunset, but let's face it, we need to get moving before too long because we're going to get caught in traffic or things like that. And so there's no point at which you really stop and focus. So I understand that mental focus. I think I can't do it, but I at least understand it. Of what you're trying to accomplish, to stay in the moment, to enjoy the sensations, large and small, that you have right now, which is, allows you, in a sense, to sort of clear your mind and focus on those things. I assume that goes, that's a, at least part of the stress reduction that you're talking about. You should focus on the moment right now because it is break time at Health Matters. That's right. We're going to take a break and come back with our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters. This is the Linda Smith Dyke Yoga A Go-Go Show. I am your host, Dr. Tony Weaver, and we are talking about yoga and yoga instruction with Linda Smith Dyke, who is a nurse practitioner and a yoga instructor in the area. Welcome back, Linda.
Thank you, Tony. Glad to be here.
Our sponsor for the final time, the Disease of the Month Club, reminding you, ALS, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, take our advice before you ice. Now, here's the thing. This is a condition that is relentlessly progressive. There are a few rare cases where it has gone into remission, but we don't know how to put it in remission. In fact, the treatments for it are really minimal. As we talked about in our first fractional portion, this is the disease that affects Stephen Hawking, the famous theoretical physicist in the United Kingdom, also Lou Gehrig of the New York Yankees, baseball player Jim Catfish Hunter of the Oakland Athletics, Mao Zedong, actor David Niven, and composer Dmitri Shostakovich all suffered from ALS. We're not certain what causes it. It seems to have a slightly higher rate in athletes, but being an athlete, there's nothing that an athlete does. Head injuries or things like that don't seem to make a difference. Smoking raises your risk slightly, as it does for many diseases. But in fact, we really don't know what causes this. Usually, survival time will average around 5 years. There are about 12,000 people in the U.S. who have ALS. That would be about 150 to 300 Kentuckians, depending on your estimates, suffer from ALS. This is the disease we're talking about, the Ice Bucket Challenge, the most innovative and interesting fundraising event in history, has raised nearly $100 million for ALS research, which is about 50 times more than was raised the previous year. On the other hand, in Kentucky, we are still losing over 7,000 people to the effects of cigarette smoking, 3,500 to lung cancer alone. Heart disease claims 9,600 Kentuckians. Accidents and injuries, ATVs, 2,600. Respiratory infections, almost 3,000. Alzheimer's disease, 1,400. And the prevalence of these diseases, obviously much, much higher than that of ALS, which would, we suspect, would cause the death of around 30 to 40 people per year in the state of Kentucky. Not to minimize this disease, it's a horrific disease, well worth raising and spending money to improve the lot of people who suffer from this disease. But we must also keep in mind what is affecting the people around us and have some compassion for those who other conditions that are so much more prevalent in our state. That's our sponsor, the Disease of the Month Club, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, Lou Gehrig's disease. Take our advice before you ice. Now, we decided for this fractional portion that we're going to take a slightly different direction. I am going to put on my gym shorts, my tube socks, those plastic glasses that have the tape in the middle, and I am going to go to Linda's yoga classes. Now, first of all, Linda, you've got several sites where I could go, correct?
That's true. I do.
And where would that be?
I teach at my studio in at our home. We have an organic farm in Wellington, Kentucky, on right off of Highway 1274. I teach there Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, at 10 o'clock. All of my classes are about 75 minutes. I also teach in Moorhead at the First Baptist Church on Main Street. Starting in October, I'm adding an additional class, so there will be a 5 p.m. and following a 6:30 p.m. each Tuesday, Thursday. And then I teach at the Menifee Wellness Center in Frenchburg on Mondays and Wednesdays at 5 p.m.
Now, do I have to make advance reservations?
Oh, no.
So I just show up at the class?
Yes.
And how much am I out for this?
If you pay by the month, it's $5 a class. If you pay as a drop-in, it's $7.
So it would behoove me to get a monthly reservation. I could be a little bit more economical with that. But I'm looking at five
That's
or
right.
$7, and I'm showing up. Do I need to bring anything besides myself and some comfortable clothes?
No, I have the equipment. There's not very much equipment involved with yoga. I have equipment. Some people prefer to have their own mat just for cleanliness, that they know that they're the only ones who've been laying on it face down and whatnot. But I have plenty.
So I went to the barn. I got a tarp. I brought my tarp into the class. I got my gym shorts. I am ready to go. What am I going to do?
What was the tarp? I lost you on the tarp.
Well, I don't have a mat. I don't keep mats.
Okay, but you're going to use my mat.
Okay. You may have to hose it down afterwards, but good enough.
Right.
Fair
All
enough.
Right.
So what are we going to do first?
All right. I'm assuming you're coming to a group class.
Yes.
Okay. Well, when you come in, I'll have yogic music playing, and there is a genre called yogic music, something along those lines. I'll have you join the class. You will have a mat and then any other equipment that might be needed. I start the class by, of course, greeting everyone. I have everyone then lie down on the mat in what's called Shavasana, the corpse pose. And that's the classic resting pose at the end of most yoga classes. From the Indian point of view, it's important to relax the body prior to practice as well. So we start in the Shavasana position. You have to do nothing but relax. I will lead the mindfulness and meditation practice. And in this, there's a specific prayer that I always use, or you could call it five ideals for living, that I always use in the beginning, I should say, the beginning meditation of the class. Would you like me to tell you what that is?
Yes, please.
All right. The reason that I use this and I explain it as we meditate is that the focus of my business is healing. And so I use this prayer, which I found when I was studying Reiki, although it's common to all religions that I've ever been around and probably most traditions. And it goes like this. Let me say also that my purpose of meditating on these ideals is healing of body, mind, and spirit, healing of relationships, and by extension, healing of our world. And for these reasons, just for today, I will have an attitude of acceptance, gratitude, and forgiveness. Just for today, I will not worry. Just for today, I will let go of hurt and fear and anger. Just for today, I will do my work diligently, especially in seeking spiritual enlightenment. Just for today, I will show love and respect to all living beings. We meditate on this at the beginning of each class.
You know, and this is the purpose of this. Obviously, I'm there. I'm thinking, gee whiz, I don't have time for this. I really should have. I've got more stuff to do at the office. Maybe when I get through here, I can go back. And what about tomorrow? I'm not ready for tomorrow. I really got to do some additional reading and prep time and so forth. And what she's got to do is to shut all that down and bring me back to right here. And so you can feel that when she said that prayer, that we've got the first thing you got to do is get me in the right mental state. And then
That's
what?
Right.
So I'm in the right mental state. I finally let go of some of that stuff, or at least as much as I'm going to do this session. What do we do next?
That's a good point. Everything you said is exactly right on. I appreciate that you understood that. And this
Now, let me say, I understood it. On the other hand, I can't do it, but I understand what I'm supposed to be doing.
We also go through a body scan. That's a very common practice in mindfulness. But this whole process of reviewing this prayer and going through the body scan probably takes 5 minutes or less. And in the body scan, we mentally visit each part of the body. I take us through as we think of relaxing each part of the body. That's this opening part of the session. Then we stand and we begin our practice. In my classes, I have beginners who are there for the very first time, like you, Tony, and then I have other people who've been with me for a while. But the way I've designed my practices and the fact that it's gentle yoga is these classic yoga postures I can teach to the whole group. So you can keep up with the class. You can participate with the class, whether it's your very first class or whether you've come to many classes. And that's because there are variations to each pose that can make it easier or more difficult. And for each individual, I can make modifications to make it work until your body's ready for a little bit more of a challenge.
Now, are you trying then to develop flexibility, or are these all these poses simply a way to keep my mind from going back to what I want to do tomorrow or what I should have done yesterday?
Oh, that's a good question. The yogic poses called asanas, the asanas are simply postures, are they're very much physical. There is a mental focus involved, and there is breathing, there's rhythmic breathing that goes along with the postures. But a large part of what we're doing with the asanas is building strength and flexibility and improving the function of the organs, improving posture. And I'm sure I don't have to tell you that improving the placement of the shoulders, for example, and improving the entire posture from head to toe increases the efficiency of the internal organs. So we're actually, from the yogic perspective, we're treating common diseases by doing asanas. So there, it's very much a physical focus.
You mentioned also in the break we were talking, you said that there are breathing techniques in addition to the physical poses that you take. Tell us a little bit about the breathing techniques that you use.
All right. There's one that I use, and I recommend this for anybody who might be listening and just want to try this. From the yogic perspective, one of the breathing techniques that I've learned is called wave breath. W-A-V-E, wave breath. And it's considered the most efficient way for a human being to breathe. And over time, if practiced, can improve the function of all the internal organs and increase mental clarity. I teach this in each of my Shavasana sections at the beginning and end of class. In the wave breath, simply mentally following the breath, the inhale through the nostrils, chest, diaphragm, and deep into the abdomen. With the exhale, you mentally follow the breath from the abdomen, past the diaphragm, chest, and back out the nostrils. You're aware of the fact that the front of your body lifts with the inhale and gently falls with the exhale. When doing wave breath, the abdominal muscles should be soft, so we don't have to worry about sucking our belly in. While we're doing wave breath, we're allowing that deep abdominal breathing, which is a trigger for relaxation all on its own. But wave breath is a very functional way for a human being to breathe. And I really like to teach it to folks perhaps who are older and the posture has changed, so they're leaning forward, closing the lungs and not getting good deep breaths. I've been teaching this to my mother to try to increase mental clarity, and she's benefiting from it.
Wow, and you actually taught your mother something. See, I've been yelling at my mother about stuff and getting nowhere, so maybe I should take a page from your instruction techniques. So I hope our radio fans can see, when we talk about then inner peace, it's not, this is, in at least to my way of thinking, these are concrete, solid steps that you can take. Many of the breathing techniques I am aware of, through my very limited knowledge of this, the breathing techniques and the mental focus techniques you can employ during stressful situations. So what happens in these sessions is meant to be taken out of these sessions and used in your daily life. With that, then, with that calm, that actually helps lower stress levels, which could affect the things like blood pressure, heart disease, and so forth. Yoga, we know that it makes sense. We know there's an interaction between stress and many diseases. The actual science behind it still a little bit to be developed. Obviously, like many things, it would depend upon the ability of a person to accept the principles and to practice them. So it's not as simple as simply everybody gets a pill in their mouth with the same concentration of a drug. On the other hand, it does have some great potential. Let me ask you, on the flip side now, we've got just a couple minutes left, and I want to be sure to get this in. There have been cases from yoga of orthopedic injuries, some of the more difficult postures, which I gather you're not using, the ones that really test a human limits. There is something called competitive yoga, where we see how many poses a person can get through in a limited period of time. I found when we put Health Matters on iTunes, there was also something called hot nude yoga. So there is virtually every form, every kind of permutation and yoga that you can possibly think of. Your point, though, is then that the physical poses, the breathing exercises, are really subservient to the mental and spiritual part of the yoga. That's what we've been saying.
Yes.
Let me ask you, what have you seen in your patients, final thoughts here, what have you seen in the patients that you would have as a nurse practitioner prescribed medicine for? What changes have you seen in the people you've been working with?
Well, I'm glad that you asked that, and I know that they've been making their own primary care providers very happy. I've had several that started with me and have now been with me for several months, have gone to their primary care providers who've said, "What happened? What are you doing? You look great," etc. So, weight loss, not just because there are rules or not just because we burn calories. It has more to do with the lifestyle changes that come one after the other. One builds on the other. And I think with the inspiration, it's almost the inspiration of this lifestyle of being more natural and healthier, one precept sort of builds on the next, so that without deliberately trying to diet, people are losing weight. I've had several who have lost significant amounts of weight, including myself, and their lab values are improving, their blood pressure is improving. When I say lab values, cholesterol, blood sugar, I have diabetics who come to me are having much better control of blood sugar. And even the side effects of diabetes, such as diabetic retinopathy, is not progressing as quickly as it had been. Very interesting benefits have been achieved. And it's surprising how quickly the flexibility comes from the folks, as I mentioned, who come to my classes with arthritis or they've had joint replacements, and it seems to come very quickly.
I'd like to, in closing, give thanks to my guest, Linda Smith-Dyke, advanced nurse practitioner, yoga instructor. Also to Moorhead State Public Radio producer Spencer Johnson, to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Take a deep breath, cleansing breath, follow your exercises, and show your support for Health Matters and Moorhead State Public Radio by visiting our digital empire. WMKY.org is where the show is housed. You can get an MP3 of it there. Visit us on Facebook at HM Radio Show. For our radio crew and the supporting folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember, Health Matters is used to treat obsessions and compulsions in patients with obsessive compulsive disorder when the obsessions or compulsions cause marked distress, are time-consuming, or significantly interfere with social or occupational functioning. Health Matters may increase suicidal thoughts or actions in some children, teenagers, and young adults, especially in the first few shows. Listeners of all ages should be monitored at all times and observed closely for clinical worsening, suicidality, or unusual changes during our show. Call your doctor if you become severely ill during the show and have these symptoms: agitation, hallucinations, coma. That's right. Call your doctor if you go into a coma during our show, or other changes in your mental status: racing heartbeat, high or low blood pressure, sweating, fever, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, muscle tightness, as these may be symptoms of a life-threatening condition called radio show syndrome. Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for our exciting series on the health benefits of procrastination on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.